I feel confident, comfortable, and completely right in saying that the spirit of the universe lives in the vibrations created by Black American music. For this episode, I spoke to three different artists, all Black, who all practice in vastly different genres. I asked them questions about the complications of creating music during lockdown, the strangeness of digital audiences, and how the coronavirus pandemic has committed them to their craft like never before. And as a special treat, each guest has offered a piece, classical and original, to feature here on the show. So listen closely to hear their music after the interviews. I'm truly honored to present this episode. The music you'll hear sounds like a magical mix of pure vulnerability and the sweet gift of melody that our ancestors blessed us with. And in true Sick Empire fashion, the lineup is as unique as each passenger on the 2 train at 14th Street Station during rush hour.
Sick Empire.
This is Brandon Janice, and you're listening to
Sick Empire.
Sick Empire. This week's episode is titled The Black Sounds of Lockdown. To start us off, I'd like to introduce Rihanna Hernandez, a classically trained violinist raised in the Bronx who currently plays her violin in a Brooklyn-based punk rock band. Rihanna and I talked for a while about how easy it is to fold under the pressure to create music during the coronavirus pandemic.
But I love a lot of popular musicians nowadays, a lot of the hip-hop artists, 100%. I will listen to them on repeat and walk down the street. It is fascinating how you aren't seeing a lot. And then I think about the majority of the other musicians I listen to that don't have anywhere near the notoriety or the production value or even the money to get to the level that these others are at. But I'm able to go and see them at a... like alone with a banjo on a stage and there's nothing there and I would pay money to see it. And I see them producing. I see them making the effort to still be part of those raw spaces where they had their, either where their start was or where they kind of want to get back to. Or I do want to say it does separate a lot of these popular people from those with actual, I hate to say like talent, because I mean, It's one thing to have talent instrumentally and like vocally, but it's another to be able to create something from nothing when you have all now essentially all the time in the world, and like you haven't done anything to do that yet. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So I think like that too, right? Yeah. On those exact same lines, and then I also kind of take a step back and I think that. Well, shit, Brandon, sometimes I do need the world to create. Sometimes I do need to, like, get out there and hear how people talk
100%.
And the slang that they use and the way they stumble and fumble over their words when they're lying or
yeah.
The way that they're very direct when they're serious. You know, sometimes I do need other people to influence me.
Yeah.
And now that we can't do that, like, I can still write and I can still create, but there is a difference there. You know, I am pulling just from me. And maybe that's the scary part, you
yeah.
know? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
It's funny you bring that up because it took me kind of almost going back to basics. Almost like that pressure to be on the same level of output as everybody else is kind of removed. I went live for the very first time on Friday. And it's not like I had like hundreds of people, but I was 6 new people who had no idea that I could be in class. I could play classically because I got a chance to like look, take some time to look within myself and build on my skill and like draw from, you know, myself and not have to depend on my band to constantly be there to like give that push.
In that sense, let me ask you this. Since lockdown, and have you developed any type of connection that you didn't have before to your instrument?
Yeah, I think that, and I had obviously, I think having the time to sit and just marinate and be alone with the instrument, it's silly. I almost feel like I was back in high school. I felt the connection of how when I was not first playing, but when I was a little bit more sentient and aware that I wasn't like an absolutely shitty, terrible player, that I was still like excited about it. Being alone and kind of having my own time to do my own shit has been amazing. I kind of feel like I have that excitement again.
Living in New York City, right? The epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic and being an artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard the ways that you're kind of getting more connected to your instrument. Is there any fear that you will become distant from the music, not hearing it out, not playing it for people, not being with your band? Is there any fear that one day you could look up and be distant from it? Am I making sense?
I hear you. Yeah. That's a fantastic question. There's still such a desire for it to, for music to exist. It's such a connecting form of like a human experience, like music. It's just, I feel like there's almost going to be like a shortage of it. Like there won't be enough to kind of placate the need that I think is going to be there.
What are your thoughts on having that weight or that pressure, if you will, of whatever you make, it will be left behind as art that was made during the coronavirus pandemic? I know it'll be your art, it'll be your music, but it'll have another title on it.
What'll it be? It'll be like music from the Corona times. It'll probably have its... I would not be shocked to find a specific genre of music that is specifically titled maybe like pandemic.
What does it sound like?
It'll all just be really lo-fi like versions of what we wanted to produce. When you brought up the fact that you were looking into art back in the Spanish, you know, the time of the Spanish flu, I was just having like a shower thought the other day, like, wow, if an alien society were to come and check out Earth like millions of years ago and they go through our archives and our art, this one point in time, and there's going to be a whole lot of masks and a lot of different art.
Next up is Brandon Dixon, on stage known by his DJ alias, Out of Office.
You are now listening to Out of Office.
Brandon is originally from Baltimore, and his connection with the house scene of his city is evident. Listen as he talks to me about how being quarantined with his equipment has evolved his practice beyond a crowded dance floor. I was wondering, like, since we're all kind of like stuck in our houses and stuck in our homes, have you like gotten closer to DJing in a way? That's a weird question.
No, it's not. It's not weird at all. It's funny.
You know what I'm saying? Because
I know exactly what you mean. Like, it has more of an intimate moment with it. It's just you and the music. When you're alone, and I find myself doing this a lot now too, you find yourself being in certain pockets of certain types of music and understanding the music, like the tempos, the instruments that these musicians are playing in the songs, a little bit more intimately, which I think puts a greater amount of just understanding to the music. And I can try something a little bit more creative than I didn't explore before. Because before I was just kind of waiting for a ooh or a ah from a crowd that was in front of me.
Once this is all over and you've kind of already had this deeper connection with the music and with the actual craft, can that come first now and the audience come second? Or like even where you're playing, you know, because nobody wants to play to an empty room, or like nobody wants to play in basements forever. But will that change, do you think? Like now that you've had this kind of like, this just like completely different experience, like with the music, like does their opinion matter just like a little less?
I think so. My connection with the music in turn just kind of gives me a little bit more of a fearlessness and an upward confidence. And with that, it helps me guide the crowd more into where I want them to be, to feeling the music.
How silly are those Zoom DJ concerts?
All right, I'm going to be real. They are, to me, a waste of time. Like, I don't think that people experience a song, experience the feeling of music the way you do in person, let alone with a commune, with a group of people alongside you sharing that same experience. And I think now, especially, you know, with us all being indoors because of COVID, we're pivoting to a state of being now where we're kind of digitally being social. The IG lives and the Zooms are fun and all because it's a way of adjustment for us in this time, but I don't think that it's the permanent fix. Just kind of looking at a screen and kind of squinting to see what people are talking about while we're DJing, it just seems kind of very counterintuitive because I think the DJ needs to interact with people in front of them. I don't think bedroom DJs are a long-term thing whatsoever.
Remember when those protests were going on in Baltimore, like just a couple years ago?
Yes, when Freddie Gray passed away. Yes. Yeah, that was a very dark time for my city. Yeah. But I think that music and then just community just kind of got us through it.
And I was wondering if you know anything about like Baltimore music in general and its connection to like the struggle, the civil rights struggle that is Black America.
Yeah, definitely. Even prior to Baltimore Club, even with the history of house as a whole in being a genre came from oppression. When it started in the Midwest with the Chicago club, The Warehouse, the late 70s, and it was a primarily Black club. And that's where I think the creation of club kind of started. And when it reached Baltimore and clubs started and the footwork dancing started in Baltimore, I think that's really where it became a conduit for Baltimore natives to find some type of release from the day-to-day oppression that we saw. I mean, for the longest time, Baltimore being one of the nation's leads in murders and homicides was so deafening. And me being home before I moved to New York and seeing that, you know, day-to-day on the news was just so disheartening. And there were two clubs in Baltimore that were highly known for Baltimore club music, one spot called Hammerjacks and one spot called The Paradox, which people would know as just called The Docks. And these two clubs ran Baltimore City. Like, regardless of what happened throughout the week or how many murders were happening or people were being locked up, those two clubs, you knew that you could go there and just kind of release yourself and just kind of have like a spiritual moment within that too. I think that was probably the most important part. So I don't think that from the beginning of the music scene, Baltimore was intended to win. Politicians were bashing down the genre, even after they were receiving accolades from higher musicians. I remember DJ Class had did a collab with one of his older songs with Kanye West and Lil Jon. I don't know if you remember the song. How's it go? It was like, I got my diamonds on my neck, got Patron in my cup. That song is about like maybe like 25 years old. Kanye West and Lil Jon and decided to hop on the remix. But I remember that exact time when that happened and Baltimore was reaching its peak of murder rates in the city. But when that song dropped, for that week that the song released, there were maybe about like three murders on top of like what would normally be about 15, you know? So I think that Baltimore City definitely rides on having to have some type of positivity, whether it be the music or someone from the city receiving an accolade. Because if not, it turns very much into a cannibalism situation, you know? So I think that the music is what really drove home Baltimore's notoriety. You know, like there was nothing else really that the city was really driving in but that. Yeah, I just think that it was really important for the music to be its home front because anything else was kind of just downriding the city as a whole.
How important is it to have another Paradox, to have another space where people can come and experience like a level of spirituality that
can only be found through house music, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember I went to this Larry Levin street party a few years ago. It was probably like upwards of 900 people there, all on the block in the Lower East Side, where Larry used to play out of this warehouse. And it was all like older Black people, probably in their 40s, 50s, maybe even 60s. They started kind of playing his mixes. And I mean, this isn't like crazy for me to be dancing in the middle of a crowd, but I was like totally in it. You know what I'm saying? Like I was there and I just felt people just around me, you know, dancing and feeling the vibe too. And they were totally there. And it was like, you know, I needed that. I didn't know I needed it at the time. I mean, how important do you think it is, like, for times like right now, for example, with COVID-19 and with even the recent protests, how important is it to, like, value those places and, like, and have those places where people can come and just release in a different type of way that is very specific to me, to house music?
It's super important. I think that we're in a certain climate right now of our economy where we're not able to do that. What we're in right now is a result of having all of that like bent up angst at the moment. I know, for example, like my residency that I have at Soho House called House Shoes, which is entirely dedicated to house music. And I know you went to the last one right before we were on lockdown. And it was, I do it monthly, but I think with that one specifically, like the energy in the room was just so electric and so like thick, you could cut it with a butter knife. People were so reactionary to the music and just being like, I can finally let my shoulders back and put my hair down and just sweat out all of the negative energy that has been input on me throughout the past week or month or 6 months or the past year, and just have a time to just experience some type of spiritual moment with music. I think without that, people don't really have a connection to music as much.
What do you think about protest music?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I'm actually in the process of finalizing a mix. I would never title it as protest music, but now I guess that's what it would be called. My next project is about, I don't know, maybe 15 archived and more well-known audio clips of Jill Scott Heron. And he does spoken word as well as, you know, traditional songs, but I would kind of consider him like kind of like protest music. So I'm using these audio clips that I found of archived Heron, and I'm blending them with Jay Dilla tracks. It's another way for musicians and DJs alike to also put out the quote unquote word to continue spreading words of the revolution.
When we're talking about protest music, right, and we're talking about people making music during times of struggle, what are your thoughts on that? There is something about when artists, musicians make music at really depressing times, either in their life or a depressing time for their environment. There's something about the vulnerability that shines and it cannot be faked. Along those lines, like, making mixes and kind of searching in the archives and like being quarantined in the epicenter of a global health crisis, do you feel the vulnerability that is present while you're creating? And I think there is something to be said about the civil rights movement and the music that came out of the 60s. And I think there's something to be said about dark times and powerful vulnerability and it expressing itself almost at that point. The vulnerability is expressing itself through the music, and the person recording it or the person mixing it, the person playing it is just the vessel. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Back in the late 70s, Nina Simone came out with Baltimore, And Baltimore in the late 70s, early 80s, like it was a huge heroin and crack epidemic. Like drugs were spewing out of Baltimore through all sides. But I think when Nina Simone came out with the song Baltimore, it helped ease tensions a little bit, and also a very vulnerable time for her, because if I recall correctly, she wasn't 100% sure if that should have even came out, if that song should have came out, if that project in itself should have came out. That's the challenge that I have to give myself, is saying, hey, do I have to and do I want to be as vulnerable as I am right now because of how I'm feeling in these times, without, I don't want to use the word coon, but like just giving in, because that's what the masses want right now. You know, like I wasn't quite sure if people wanted to hear music that you're going to dance super hard to in these times, or is it more something that you want to hear that's more familiar to the ear? Finding that vulnerability between it is super important, and I think it's also needed.
You are now listening to Out of Office.
Thanks for tuning in. I'll be right back after a word from the sponsors of this episode. So many people don't know where to start when it comes to mental health. It can be overwhelming, it can be intimidating, and it's an uncomfortable topic for a lot of us to talk about. Amani's State of Mind is a new podcast from Stitcher that breaks down mental health and wellness in an accessible and approachable way. This show is hosted by Dr. Imani Walker, who's been practicing as a psychiatrist for over 10 years. You may know her from the Bravo show Married to Medicine. She equips listeners with the right language and tools to normalize having these conversations, breaking down the stigma, and especially tailors her discussions to people of color. It's important to remember to take care of ourselves, and we have to keep our minds healthy to keep growing and keep fighting. And Amani's State of Mind gives us the tools and tips we need to navigate it all. Please listen to Amani's State of Mind right now on Stitcher, Apple, or your favorite podcast app.
Ooh, it's the pathway to
My name's Lissandra. I work for the North Star as our podcasting director and as Sean's executive assistant. On an early Tuesday afternoon, sometime in January, I got a text from Sean to check out an important email we had just gotten about Michael Thompson's case. If you ever listened to our podcast, The Breakdown, you might know about Michael's case already. He's a 68-year-old man who was essentially given a life sentence for selling weed in Michigan in 1995, where weed is now legal, by the way. For months, we had been fighting to have Governor Gretchen Whitmer free Michael. The email Sean had texted me about was from Michael's attorney, asking Sean for a letter to add to a petition that they were filing for Michael's case. In classic Sean fashion, he didn't just agree to write a letter. He asked whether any amount of letters from the public would help the petition. Lauren said that they would, and that there was no limit to how many they could include, but the filing deadline was only 8 days away, and she didn't have time to organize a full letter drive. That's where we came in. By the next morning, our teams at the North Star and the Action Pack had created a website to gather letters. We had drafted copies for multiple episodes of The Breakdown, had meetings with Sean, created graphics to share about Michael's case, and set a social media strategy. By the filing deadline a week later, we presented Lauren with over 20,000 personalized letters to Gretchen Whitmer, urging her to grant Michael a commutation. Fast forward, and our fight for Michael is still ongoing. As Sean's assistant, I can tell you that he still talks to Michael on the phone multiple times per month. The story I just told you about Michael's case represents one of my favorite things about this job. Producing a podcast at the North Star means actively fighting for change and bringing thousands and sometimes millions of ordinary people into that fight. Maybe you wrote letters for Michael. The best way to support this work is to become a member of the North Star. We're grassroots here. Every single monthly membership, whether it's $10 or $25 or $150, they all allow us to keep fighting for people like Michael. Please consider joining us. You can easily become a member by going to thenorthstar.com. If you're already a member, a huge thank you. We're able to do this work because of you. And again, to join us, go to thenorthstar.com.
To close the show, I want to share a transformative conversation I had with my dear friend, Stephen Fowler, a Harlem-based trumpet player and composer. We talked for about an hour and touched on everything, from the magical portals that only Black music can open up to the joy of making beautiful music during these stormy times.
Have you felt any type of disconnection with your instrument with this virus?
Yes and no. And the reason I say yes is because I don't use it the same way I used to use it. Before the coronavirus hit, the connection wasn't as like internal as it has become now. The relationship I have with it now is like so much more intimate than it was. Before I looked at it as a trumpet, you know, it's just like, okay, this is a trumpet and I play it like this and I express myself this way. I try to express the inner parts of who I am through this instrument. But now it's truly a mirror. And I was able to see that before, but now I see it in a different way because I don't have to perform for anyone. It's funny. It's like all the stuff you think you playing that's hip, and you think it's cool. So you don't have anybody to play it for now. Some of the cliches that I've been playing before the virus hit don't even matter anymore. So my playing has changed completely. So that's how my relationship has changed to my instrument. It's more of a mirror now, and it's the relationship is way more transparent than it's ever been in my life.
Is the music now again more important than the claps?
I think so. I do think that the music has taken the front seat.
I mean, because shit, the claps ain't there. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
The claps ain't
exactly.
there. So it's like...
Who you playing for? I think as a musician or just as a creator in general, now is the perfect time to be creating authentically, not because you want to appease this or appease that or reach this and reach that. It's like you do it now because the playing field has truly been leveled. You know, when it comes down to the essential things in a society, art is the first thing to go all the time. And that's how I was beginning to feel. Musicians, creators, creative people on the planet probably serve the most significant role in humanity right now because we're the people that instill hope and give society that sense of moral direction.
I don't want to hear your thoughts on that. I want to hear your thoughts on the idea of coming out of quarantine with a new mindset when you perform. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I was thinking about this yesterday, actually. Well, I was watching a little clip of a Nina Simone interview, and she said that it's imperative that the artist, the creator, reflects the times that the artist is in. And that struck me because I can say for the greater part of my life, I didn't really see the things that I was watching my people go through, Black and brown people. I didn't really see or hear the things that we were going through reflected in people's music. The coronavirus has affected us in a way where there's nothing to hide behind. I find it fascinating and ironic that the artistry has stopped in a sense. No one is really creating the big names that we've seen. And you know, I don't want to talk poorly about anyone in particular, but there was some music and there have been things that have come out recently that still aren't reflecting the times that we're in right now. And then 100 years from now, people are going to look back on this period of time and not have a clue what the fuck was going on, for real. Because they definitely won't be able to look at the art and to be able to denote that.
With so much time on our hands, I've noticed some people on social media using lockdown as an opportunity to learn how to play a new instrument. I asked Steven what people should know before pursuing a relationship with music. Here's what he had to say.
Deciding to pick up an instrument is a serious endeavor. And the only reason I say that isn't so much because I'm a musician myself. It's because I know what instruments are capable of doing. Because they have a very sophisticated way of tapping into spiritual realms and like scientific dimensions. Once you decide to pick up an instrument, your life will change from that moment on. And it's up to you whether or not you're going to follow through with that or not, because it's a huge responsibility.
Do you think you make better music when the times are stressful or the shit's going down, everything's closing in? Do you think there's something to be said about the relief of stress through music during trying times?
I do think that there is beautiful music that's created during hard times, for sure. But I think those hard times is what pushes the creative person to a place of vulnerability. And that's where the good music comes from, the place of vulnerability.
Then Steven and I talked about the current political climate and how police brutality continues to terrorize Black Americans. He started to talk about the tragic murder of Breonna Taylor.
Yo, that shit broke my heart. Talking about the responsibility of being a musician and reflecting the times and me having the types of experiences that I've had with instruments, I said, okay, what can I do right now that will contribute to the relief of her family, her partner, her own spirit and her own soul, and the other people who are impacted negatively by this. And I went to the piano. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll never forget it. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I sat down. I just started playing something. And that shit was so beautiful. And the more I played it, the better I felt. And I was like, man, I hope that one day her family can hear this.
And with that, listen to this original piece, composed and played by Stephen Fowler, perfectly titled Breonna's Redemption. please feel inspired to dance, shout, and release it all to this Baltimore Club Mix, curated by Out of Office, specifically for Sick Empire. Tomorrow's
a new day, free from all the things that you did. You are now listening to Out of Office. A new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day, free from all the things that you didn't say. Tomorrow's a new day.
Oh,
now listening to Ant of Office. You are now listening to Out of Office.
And now, please enjoy Rihanna Hernandez playing Concerto in G Minor, Opus 12, First Movement by Antonio Vivaldi.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sick Empire. This podcast is produced and presented by the North Star. The North Star is funded entirely by our members. You can also support Sick Empire by going to Apple Podcasts, subscribing to Sick Empire, and leaving us your best review. Tell us what you love about the podcast. On any other podcasting platform, please subscribe and follow us. All of the music in this podcast is produced by the North Star's senior producer, Willis. Special thanks also goes to our guests and every staff member at the North Star.